Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1236, we present a seasonal classic, written and read by Nancy Chong. As well as contributing many fine stories to this radio program, tonight's writer, Nancy Chong, was invaluable as an early Unknown Writers Festival coordinator and multifaceted volunteer for many Life Rattle projects. Nancy Chong was born the fourth of six children in 1955 in Toronto on Phoebe Street, which straddles the trendy Queen Street West area and the Spadina Avenue Chinatown. In 1958, when Nancy was almost 4 years old, her father died, and her mother, who spoke no English, was suddenly left with six children. To support them, Su Jin Chong started sewing piecework for the garment industry on Spadina. She sewed from morning to night and got the kids working too. She became so adept at dealing with the clothing manufacturers on Spadina that she became the chief negotiator on behalf of a number of Chinese women. In 1992, Nancy Chong began writing a book about her mother. This was complicated because Nancy did not speak Chinese very well, and her mother spoke only Chinese. Fortunately, Nancy received a Canada Council Explorations Grant that enabled her to hire an interpreter to help her interview her mother. Su Jin Chong died in March 1997 at the age of 76. Tonight's story presents an account of Nancy's ground-level research as she accompanied her mother to Honest Ed's, where they lined up early to get free turkeys. I'm sure the story will spark some Honest Ed's memories for many people in Toronto. The recording of the story has been transferred from cassette tape. Because of that, the quality of the sound is not as good as it should be. But after you listen, you'll know why we couldn't leave this story on the shelf. Let's listen now as Nancy Chong reads her story, Christmas Turkey, tonight on Life Rattle.
Christmas Turkey by Nancy Chong. My mother stood at the sink in her kitchen. Cold water from the tap splashed on the pots in the sink. She held one pot under the stream of water and turned it over to rinse off the soap. The pot banged against the stainless steel sink, knocked against another pan as water flowed from the tap. My mother lifted the pot from the sink and placed it on top of the wet dishes draining on the dish rack. The dishes shifted under the weight of the freshly rinsed pot. I sat listening to the clatter and waited for my mother to finish washing her dinner dishes. "You are not working next week?" my mother asked. "No," I replied. "Come get a turkey," she said. "Get a turkey and a bag of potatoes. You don't have to pay." "Where?" I asked. "Lam Tang Lao," my mother said. My mother and her friends called Honest Ed's Lam Tang Lao, three-story store. Last year, they gave a turkey and a bag of potatoes. 8-pound turkey, 10 pounds of potatoes. "What day?" I asked. "Monday," my mother said. "Have to go early if you want one. Last year, I waited 3 hours. They must have given out 1,000 turkeys." My mother had lined up 2 years in a row for Honest Ed's annual Christmas giveaway of turkeys. When I was a high school student over 20 years ago at Central Tech, I saw the lineups for the Door Crasher specials at Honest Ed's on Bloor Street. My friends and I laughed at the long lines of people waiting for the 5-cent specials. I knew that on occasion my mother lined up for the Door Crashers with her friends. I did not tell my friends. "Wait 3 hours," I said. "I'll buy you one." My mother ignored me. If you're not working, what else are you doing? My mother said. 3 hours, I muttered. I had no intention of joining my mother in the 3-hour lineup. You have to go, David said when I told him about the free turkey. You have to go with her. This is what your mother does. I'm going to drive by in the hydro truck and tell the guys in the truck that you are lining up with your mother for a free turkey. David laughed. Don't you dare, I said. Saturday evening, 7:30 p.m. The phone rang. Coming on Monday, my mother asked. Yes, I said. I'll come to your house and then we go together. Be here at 8:30. Don't be late. Sunday evening, 9:30 p.m. The phone rang. I answered. Meet us at Lam Tang Lao, my mother said. It's too much bother to come here first. If you get there first, save your spot and then look for me. If I get there first, I save my spot and then look for you. No, I said, I'm coming to your house. I did not want to argue with any of the experienced, honest-ed door crasher bargain hunters over a spot in the line. If I got into line before my mother arrived, I knew she would expect me to save her a spot. If we arrived together, there would be no argument. Be here at 8 a.m. then, my mother said. We have to go earlier. When you get to the subway station, push the button and get us 2 transfers. No, I said. I would not help my mother scam the TTC system. She would embarrass me if she got caught. Sunday evening, 10 p.m., the phone rang again. If that's my mother, tell her I went to bed, I said before David answered the phone. She's gone to sleep, David said into the receiver. She has to wake up early. I knew it was her, I said. She'll call back in the morning. Monday morning, 5:50 a.m., the phone rang. The ringing woke us up. David got out of bed, answered the phone, listened for a few seconds, and then handed the receiver over to me. I rolled over to the side of the bed and took the receiver from him. Wear pants and dress warm, my mother ordered. Come now. Okay, I said. I rolled over and went back to sleep. 7 a.m. The phone rang again. Hurry up and come, my mother's friend said. Everyone else has already gone. Okay, I said as I got out of bed. I'm coming. I sat on the edge of the bed and rubbed my eyes, picking at the crust that had collected around my eyes during the night. I could not believe that I had agreed to line up for 3 hours to get a free turkey. I dressed. I put on my polypropylene long johns and my double-layered long-sleeved underwear. I put on my padded hiking socks that fit so comfortably inside my Nike Air cross trainers. Then I put on another layer of clothes. I stumbled downstairs and poured myself a cup of boiled water from the thermos. Should I eat something? I looked at the half banana, cut and turning brown, sitting in the basket on the counter. 7:10 a.m., the phone rang. Third time that morning. Aren't you coming yet? My mother shouted. Meet us where Dundas crosses Spadina. Coming to the house takes too long. I'm coming, I said. I hung up the phone. I grabbed the half banana and ate it. I took a couple of sips of hot water. I took my pills. I grabbed my shopping bag that held the 2 folding camp stools I was taking for the 3-hour wait. I looked around the living room. I grabbed a book from the table and stuffed it into the shopping bag. I left the house at 7:15 a.m. and walked to the Bloor subway. I arrived at the Spadina station at 7:40 a.m. I walked past the transfer machine and boarded the waiting 77 southbound Spadina bus. I arrived at the corner of Dundas and Spadina at 7:50 a.m. I waited for 5 minutes before I saw my mother and her friend, Hamu, walking north along Spadina, about 3 blocks away. The 2 small women, dressed in warm coats and head kerchiefs and carrying plastic shopping bags, walked in small, quick steps. "Waiting long?" my mother asked. We boarded the Dundas streetcar that had just stopped. "Did you push the button for me?" my mother asked. She paused, a ticket in her gloved hand. She could save her ticket if I had taken a transfer for her. "No," I said as I deposited a token. "You didn't even get a transfer for yourself?" my mother asked. She looked dismayed when I said no. She dropped her ticket into the slot and then sat down in the seat in front of me. "You can't use a transfer to travel in the opposite direction," I tried to explain in my garbled Chinese. "I always take a transfer from the subway," my mother said. "Doesn't matter what direction." "That's right," Hamut said. "Any direction. The driver won't stop you." "That's because you're an old lady," I said. "The driver doesn't stop old ladies." "Just say you got off at the wrong stop," my mother said. "I know someone who had to get off at different stops to make some deliveries, and she did it all in one transfer. She just told the driver she got off at the wrong stop." My mother turned around in her seat to look at me. "Ayah," she said with disgust. "You are born here and you don't know how to ride the subway." My mother shook her head. "Don't know how to ride the subway," Hamut repeated. We arrived at Honest Ed's at 8:05 a.m. A 4-piece band from Central Tech played on the corner of Bathurst and Bloor. 600, maybe 700 people already lined the front of the store along Bloor Street and around the corner down Markham. My mother ran when she saw the lineup. She called out to friends she saw in the lineup. Hamu and I followed my mother as she hurried to the end of the line. Once in line, my mother looked around to assess the lineup. "This is about the same spot I stood last year," she said. "We'll be sure to get a turkey." The lineup grew quickly behind us. At 8:30, a big white hydro bucket truck drove north on Markham toward Bloor Street, its horn honking. The truck drove past too quickly for me to see the driver. By 9 a.m., maybe 1,500 people lined the outside of Honest Ed's, along Bloor, down Markham to the end of the block, and then around the corner on Lennox. The people in the lineup huddled against the cold, their coats buttoned and scarves wrapped in layers to keep out the wind. Many of the old Chinese women in the lineup wore crocheted wool hats pulled tightly over their heads. Some people stood stamping their feet, some sat on small plastic stools, while others sat on overturned plastic milk crates. I pulled out the folding camp stools, one for my mother and one for me, and prepared for the now 4-hour wait. Hamut pulled out a child's plastic stool from her plastic shopping bag. 2 security guards and a cop patrolled the lineup. An old man walked up to the line and stood waiting next to us. He took tiny steps and shuffled closer to the line with each step. The woman behind me started to mutter. "Go to the end of the line," someone shouted. The old man turned around to look. His red, watery eyes blinked. He shrugged. "Call the cop," the woman shouted. "We're all waiting in line. Go to the end of the line like everyone else." Others in the lineup joined in the shouting. The cop came over. "Go to the end of the line, sir," the cop said. He pointed to the end of the line. "It's not fair for the other people who are waiting in line." The old man stood in his spot, not moving. The cop shrugged his shoulders. "I can't touch him," the cop said. "I can only ask him to move." The cop walked away. The people in the lineup taunted the old man. He finally gave up and left. My mother had secured her spot and seated herself on one of the folding camp stools. Hamu reached into her plastic shopping bag and pulled out a small package of preserved tangerine peel. She gave me a piece to chew on. Then she pulled out two pieces of cake wrapped in plastic. She offered a piece to me. "I'll eat it later with some coffee," I said. Then Hamu offered me some cashews from a white paper bag. "Eat," Hamu said. "Very good to eat." She put a handful of cashews into my hands. "My son would not approve if he knew I was here," Hamu said. "I'm going to look for my friends," my mother announced, and left me sitting in the lineup with Hamu. I pulled A Guest of Honor by Nadine Gordimer from my shopping bag and tried to read. Two men in front of us in the line stood and chatted. They spoke with Caribbean accents. "I come last year," said the shorter man. "I was standing in line and this woman come up to me. 'I sat next to you in school,' she said. She just wanted to get in the line because she sat next to me in school. Man, she real fuck up." The two men laughed. "This is my fifth year," said the woman behind me. "I am a regular." "Look, there's another," someone said. A woman walking with a cane crept up to the line in front of us. "Go to the end of the line," the woman behind me shouted. The woman with the cane turned and glanced at the people shouting in the line. She muttered at them in Italian. "Call the cop," another woman shouted. The woman with the cane walked away, leaning lightly on her cane, and slipped into another spot further up in the line. "She probably doesn't even need a cane," someone commented, "just using it for sympathy." A Jamaican woman stepped out from the lineup. She walked back and forth, a few yards in each direction, staring at each face in the lineup around her. "That one, and that one there," she said, pointing out two more queue jumpers to the cop. 1/2 hour later, my mother returned to the line. "I talked to a friend," my mother said. "She came at 6. She is near the front of the line, behind the barrier." My mother pointed in the direction of Blur Street. "Let's go to McDonough," my mother said to Hamu. "We can use the washroom and get warm." She pointed at the McDonald's restaurant on the corner of Markham and Bloor. "I'm going to visit with Ventlaw first," my mother said. She left the line again to look for my cousin, who stood waiting in the line somewhere behind us. Hamu followed. It was 9:15 a.m. I heard some shouting and looked up from my book. I stood up and looked down the line. I heard my mother's voice, loud and distinctive above the shouting. "I don't care," my mother shouted as she waved her hand in the air. Someone in the line thought my mother was trying to slip in the line when she stopped to talk to my cousin. Shouts greeted my mother. She waved off the shouts as she walked away from the line. She glared at her taunters. I watched my mother walk up Markham toward Bloor Street with her friend. They crossed the street and went into the McDonald's restaurant. It was 10:30 a.m. when my mother and her friend came back to the line. My mother sat on the folding camp stool and gossiped with Hamu. They sat with their heads close together and whispered. My mother pointed to a Chinese woman in the line about 5 spaces ahead of us. "What was that?" I asked my mother when she raised her voice. My mother looked at me, ignored my question, and then whispered to Hamu. She pointed at the woman ahead of us again. I could not concentrate on the story I was reading about a white man returning to a post-colonial African country on the eve of its independence celebrations. I put my book away. The people in the line started moving up. It was close to 11 a.m. "When are they going to open the door?" someone asked. "Why don't they just give them out?" someone else complained. "We've been waiting for hours." The line began to move at 11:15 a.m. After we shuffled forward a few steps along the side of the store toward Bloor, the line stopped moving. About 5 minutes later, we shuffled forward a few steps again. We reached the corner at 11:30. A security guard stood at the corner, watching the line carefully. We reached the front door at 12 noon. Two cops patrolled the line. A crowd stood on the other side of the crowd control barrier and watched. "What's the line up for?" someone asked. "Free turkey." We climbed up the stairs to the top floor of the store. We walked past dishes, knickknacks, housewares, and clothing on three floors. Two clerks handed out plastic shopping bags and recipe books. We held out our bags. In each of our bags, Santa's helpers dropped a turkey and a Christmas fruitcake. I looked at my watch. It was 12:10 p.m. We had waited 4 hours for a free turkey and a Christmas fruitcake. My mother lifted her shopping bag, trying to guess the weight of her turkey. "Heavy," my mother said. She held out her hand. "Let me see yours." My mother picked up my bag and compared the weight to her turkey. Then she picked up Hamut's turkey to compare. "My turkey is the heaviest, and your turkey is heavier than Hamut's," my mother announced. "Are you going home now?" my mother asked. "Yes," I said. "I'm going home too," my mother said. I watched her walk toward the Bathurst streetcar stop with her friend. I did not tell my mother that I had planned to give my turkey away. I turned and walked east along Bloor toward Spadina. My arms burned. I shifted the heavy turkey from one hand to the other. I walked north on Spadina to Andayan, the native women's shelter. I knocked on the door. A young woman peered through the glass and then opened the door. "Here's a turkey and a cake," I said. I held open the Honest Ed's shopping bag to show the young woman. I lined up for it at Honest Ed's with my mother. "Thank you," the young woman smiled as she took the shopping bag. I walked back to the subway. When I got home, I dropped my tired body on the couch in the living room and lay there. Monday evening, 8 p.m., the phone rang. "My turkey is 12 pounds," my mother said. "Yours must be 11 pounds because Hamut's is 10 pounds and yours is heavier than hers." On our way home, my mother had stopped at Monlay, a grocery store in Chinatown, to have her turkey weighed. "Ventla just got a tiny little one. Nit aigoy," my mother said. "Maybe 6 or 7 pounds. My mother called all her friends to ask the weight of their turkeys. "Everyone got tiny little ones, not more than 6 or 7 pounds," my mother said. "My turkey is the biggest." My daughter's turkey cost her almost $5, my mother told everyone. She paid for 3 fares because she didn't get a transfer at the station. She doesn't know how to ride the subway. My mother sighed.
That was Nancy Chong reading her story, The Christmas Turkey. This concludes Life Rattle number 1236. Arnie Ackman recorded Nancy Chong reading her story. My name is Lori Callis. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear more stories.